The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM Stereo.
صوت الألفيات.
Voice of the Millennials.
With Yasin Kipi.
Igniting the youth.
Assalamu alaikum, welcome back to the Voice of the Millennials with myself, Yasin Kipi. One of the biggest trends when it comes to the youth in the 21st century is, of course, experiencing new things. And we're joined on the line now by Halal Safari's owner and founder, Samia Umar. Of course, she has a tourist business looking at Halal Safaris, particularly in Africa, and the opportunities that Africa has for the wider world. Assalamu alaikum, Samia.
Wa alaikum salam, Yasin. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm really fascinated by the entire concept of Halal Safaris. Tell us about it.
And thank you for the opportunity, I think, to share that. So the concept of Halal Safaris is to provide an opportunity for Muslims who typically, there's this presumption that, you know, if you go to Africa or if you go on safari, then you have to give in or give up on some of your comforts in having a Muslim friendly experience where you're going to get halal food, where you're going to get a place to pray. So most Muslims typically travel, you know, to a city or to a resort within their comfort levels, because it's presumed you can't get those extra amenities on safari, be it wildlife safari or beach safari or any other safari. So the concept of Halal Safaris is really to open up those opportunities for Muslims from within Africa as well as those from outside the continent, and how to raise awareness that there's actually halal options in Kenya, in South Africa, in Tanzania, just as there would be in a country in the Middle East. It's just that people don't know about those products, and unfortunately, because many of the tourism services we provide in sub-Sahara are not online. And so most travelers looking for places to travel don't think of a halal travel experience in sub-Saharan countries as the first option. Traditionally, those who want a halal experience go to, you know, to Turkey, they go to Singapore, to Malaysia. If anything, actually go to London. I would think of London more as a halal friendly, because of that, the presence of the Muslim population being online and there's content being shared online about that. So really, that's the, what you call it, the superficial or what's on the surface of Halal Safaris. But really inside, and the deeper values or deeper ambitions of Halal Safaris is how to create a sustainable tourism, in the sense that if more Muslims were to travel and more Muslims were to discover some of these sites, heritage sites that are important to Islamic history in Africa, there would be more keen interest in governments to actually conserve them and preserve them. We've seen so many places I'm from Kenya, and that's actually where most of the trips we plan are right now. And there's so many heritage sites, so many monuments right next to a wildlife safari. But we don't naturally think of that as a top destination to go to, and instead the government spend more money in preserving the wildlife tourism, promoting wildlife tourism, and really the Islamic heritage and Islamic sites are neglected and not promoted as a product. And contrast that to Turkey, where I've had the advantage of living and seeing how much is put into these sites and these monuments by the government, realizing that these bring in revenue for the government and bring in revenue for the people by virtue of that, thereby making tourism sustainable for the people. And that is really the core value of what Halal Safaris is about.
That's really fascinating because we often, you know, people from the West, and at times, you know, South Africans, especially our audience, we may feel like we are actually part of the West because Cape Town is known as the European city of Africa. And perhaps it's been a subconscious enculturation that whenever we think of safaris, it's this Western colonial understanding of, as you mentioned, going to see wildlife animals. Where in actual fact, the history of Islam in Africa often predates many of the other places that we may go for these halal experiences.
It's funny that you mentioned that. Even starting the company, I'd have some people wonder, well, why am I talking about, you know, heritage sites? And I thought you were selling safaris, and safaris are only about wildlife. No, safaris in itself, the word safari just means a journey. It's a Swahili word, but also it roots from the Arabic word safar. So it's a journey, and how it started historically is the first time the West started using it was these Western explorers going to Africa and to discover wildlife and the danger of wildlife. So they were going on safari, but if you actually go to the ground and especially in Swahili speaking communities, when we use the word safari, we're all just talking about travel and exploration and a journey. To me, even just calling the company Halal Safaris, it was a way to reclaim back my history, to reclaim back our common understanding of what a safari is. Even especially considering, for me coming from Kenya, it's really hard to separate a wildlife safari from everything else. I don't know if you're aware, but Nairobi has a national park that's within the city center. So it's right next to the city, there's a national park. So it's actually very easy to have both a heritage experience and a wildlife experience. And at the same time, you're in the city. And then from Lamu, the archipelago on the coast of Kenya, where I'm from, the beach is about 5 minutes away from the wildlife. So this whole separation of, no, there's the wildlife safari, and then there's and that's it. There's nothing else. It's really foreign, actually, and so opening up the eyes of not just foreigners, but even to Africans ourselves, to realize that why are we buying into this narrative that Africa is only about wildlife? We're not only about wildlife, about our history, about our culture, about our beautiful beaches, you know, our heritage and traditions. And so when somebody travels all the way from the West to visit us, we shouldn't have them focus on that narrow vision that's all they see, that the lions and the cheetahs is all they see.
Absolutely. And of course, as Muslims ourselves, it's really an imperative to meet our fellow brethren or Muslims across Africa itself, and me personally, and it's quite a shame, but I'm quite honest to say, I've never actually been to another country outside of South Africa, within Africa. I've only been to Europe and, you know, to the Middle East. And that's certainly something that should change, and I hope the listeners who've had a similar experience to me will change in the future. But certainly there's some misconceptions when it comes to traveling, even within Islam, particularly when it comes to where we should travel to. There's obviously a famous hadith that talks about the greatness of these three specific masajid, that we shouldn't travel to any masajid except these masajid. But of course, we know that, you know, the commentaries on that indicate that these particular masajid, if you pray in them, there's a greater reward. It doesn't mean you shouldn't travel to other countries. Of course, the Quran is filled with verses talking about qulf, you know, siru fil ard, that people should travel through the earth to see the various communities that have gone before us. We know the Prophet himself went and travels. And the other thing is, of course, when it comes to women traveling alone, there's so much differences of opinion about that within our own tradition, the diversity and the difference of opinion, that's a mercy when it comes to the various madhaib of jurisprudence, of fiqh. And certainly Halal Safaris offers a particular you know, package when it comes to women traveling together.
Yes, it's quite true. There's so many school of thought, and I've in terms of my experience, and also looking at the data from last year from Crescent Rating, despite all of this, despite the limitations or the cultural perceptions that a woman isn't supposed to travel and the religious opinions that a woman shouldn't travel alone. Actually, the Muslim, the solo female Muslim traveler is the fastest growing traveler within the halal travel industry. So we've had in the last couple of years, I think almost 20% of the sorry, 10% of the travel industry is actually of women and solo women traveler. And they project this will go up by 2020. And we even as women apparently spend more when traveling. And I think for Halal Safaris, to me, okay, even as a woman myself, it was more of how do you meet in the middle? Because there are those who say, no, a woman shouldn't travel alone. And there are those who say, it's okay, what's the problem if she's going to do something good and if she's not engaging in negativity? This is in terms of, again, I'm not talking about religious opinions. Here I'm talking about just personal opinions of Muslims. And the meeting in the middle is there as actually a minority, but an existing scholarly thought that it's okay if the woman travels in groups and if the woman is only traveling for only 3 days or a few days. So really within working within that, we actually came up with women only halal group safari. And the trip is broken up so that there's 3 days on safari, on a wildlife safari, and then you have 3 days on a beach safari. A woman can participate in the first half of the trip. Another one can say, I only want the second half of the trip. Combined, it will be a 6 days trip. But this is just a way to kind of allow for those women who do want to explore and want to visit and want to travel. And because increasingly what's happening with the Muslim population is that women are getting married at much older ages. Even within my circles of millennials, you have women staying until they're 40 years old and not married. And maybe in some cases, their fathers are not in their lives or their uncles are not in their lives. And this woman is working. She's going to work every day. She's making her own money and having a lot of money, excess money, and she doesn't know what to do with it. And she wants to travel. She wants to see other cultures for good reason and not necessarily for negative reasons. But is not enabled to do that. However, if you have a group of women traveling together, and especially if they're using that opportunity to learn about the Islamic heritage of their specific countries that they're traveling, it actually makes the trip more, what do you call it, nourishing or enriching to them, rather than just a luxurious trip where going shopping and looked as a luxury, but it's actually more of educational and eye-opening. We call it, mm-hmm. by the way, we call it Sister Safari. That's the actual name of the trip itself for women only.
And of course, all of this is on your website. How can people, connect with Halal Safaris? Tell us about some of your details.
We're on the website, on the internet, halalsafaris.africa, and on all social media across from Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Which is at Halal Safaris consistently across all platforms. Mm-hmm. We are online, very engaged online for that matter, because the other thing that we've come to learn from research in the tourism sector is actually the reason why even Muslim travelers now are traveling more than before is because of the digital industry. And if that information is online, and that's really what we're gearing to, is put that information online as much as possible so that people know that there are halal opportunities in Cape Town, in Nairobi, or anywhere else within Africa, in the hope that, and to me, my vision is not just for them to travel with Halal Safaris, but to just open up your eyes to the potential and explore the continent in ways that we haven't thought of exploring before as Muslims.
Now, of course, a part of the traveling as well is educational, but also, some sort of fun activities is also, really important. And I know certainly when it comes to coming to Cape Town, the big feature of people visiting here is the food itself. People love food. And even though we are you know, about 5% or, you know, maybe a bit more of the South African population, our impact upon the political and socioeconomic aspects of South Africa has been huge, so much so that if you go anywhere, you'll usually find halal shops all over the place. And we've also created a, you know, a authentic South African, you can call it a Muslim or Cape Muslim food, you know, recipes and various things. I mean, our listeners will know what I refer to when I say buba or kusisas. These are, it's a mixture of the Indian and Malay, you know, food traditions into forming our own foods, and it's absolutely wonderful, and tourists really love that aspect of our society. Tell us about, you know, the luxury or the fun aspect of visiting, you know, the places that you offer, particularly, I believe, Kenya.
Okay, thanks. And not to be academic, so when I talk about enriching or learning knowledge, we're not going to be sitting behind a desk and learning it. But and I do one thing. I do find the most enriching, at least in these safaris, that's and the most exciting is actually being able to do what naturally historically people used to do in those communities. And the fun thing, and to me, what I enjoy the most, what I feel is so authentic, is working with the local communities. For example, in Lamu, we have dhows and traditional dhows, and that's the only way to get around the islands. And so at the same time, you have a fun activity where you're going on a dhow trip, you're sailing through the mangroves, and you're exploring a sunset cruise through the islands. That's just exploring that and having a fun experience with the dhow operators and seeing what they're doing or how they used to do it for centuries. That's how a way you have fun, but you also learn at the same time. But position, I'm talking, that's more in reference to the group trips. But what we also do is have tailored trips. Tailored trips meaning that it's not that, okay, well, you will have somebody who say, you know, I'm not really interested in learning about heritage. I'm just here to have bungee jumping and go skydiving, which I've had somebody say they just want to come for snorkeling and want to go and go scuba diving in the coast. And so the tailored trips allows for that, is to say, what's fun for you? What do you enjoy? How can we make that trip for you? And there are actually not that many, tailored safari packages. A lot of what happens nowadays is you have a travel agency that comes with a package and they say, this is what you'll do for these trips, and this is what we're selling, and that's it. But to actually sit down and understand the clients, because every Muslim is different and every traveler is different. So we're working on trying to understand two different things. But in Cape Town, we haven't started a package in Cape Town and in South Africa. But you have a lot to offer that it's so hard, depending on what the personality of the person is. You have somebody can go dive with sharks. I'm not that adventurous to do that. I'm not that adventurous to do that. And maybe another Muslim might be. So what a tailored package allows you to is to understand the personality of the traveler, to say, what do you feel like? And then finding and identifying those attractions for that person, an individual. But our group trips that we do, the exclusive group trips, are Islamic heritage trips. So that is where we create a historical way that people travel through time to see how explorers, I think most people are familiar with Ibn Battuta, and although Mansa Musa didn't get to Kenya, but Ibn Battuta got all the way to Tanzania, and seeing how did they travel in those days. Okay, they used the dhow. Let's go with the dhow. Let's experience that. That's a very a separate package. But the tailored package, really, even for families, I've had one family say, you know, we want to come with our kids. We want a place where we want to be able to take our kids to do a fun activity and engage with wildlife. And so with Kenya, we have the Masai Mara, which is very popular. A lot of people swarm there. It's crowded some times of the year if you go at the wrong time. But by tailoring it, we're able to say, you know what, you should come at this time. And this is the lodge you should go to, because they actually have babysitters. And while you can go and have fun as a mother, and you can have your kids taken care of. And so that's what we really enjoy the most in doing, is it's kind of like you'd say a doctor. It's not a one pill fits all. And it really depends on who the traveler is and what they're seeking to get out of the experience.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some of these famous travelers that we know, Ibn Battuta, Mansa Musa, but there's so many untold stories as well. I mean, there's so many historical lessons that we can learn and really inspiring stories from our own history in Cape Town, South Africa. People such as Sheikh Yusuf of Makassar, who was a great, great scholar in Indonesia, and some of the, of course, the kings and the princes and some of the advisors of the royalty in Indonesia had come over to South Africa as political prisoners. But not only that, I think many people across the world know South Africa as being famously, as termed by Nelson Mandela, the Rainbow Nation. But it's not only mm-hmm. that because of it being, various different races, but also with regards to the origins of the people when it comes to the Muslims themselves. We have Muslims from the broader parts of Africa. Really, a large proportion of the original Muslims were from other parts of Africa, Indonesia, Yemen, India, Afghanistan, many different places, of course, Europeans as well. There's so much history to show how many English people had come over and become Muslim and had contributed positively to the first madaris and Muslim schools that had opened up in South Africa. So I think no matter where you are from in the world, you'll always find something to relate to, mm-hmm. When it comes to traveling to these new places. One of the other things that you really pointed out that's really important is, continuing with the times and looking at the industry as a business opportunity, and also an opportunity to do good in the world. One of the things that we'll be talking about in a forthcoming interview, hopefully, is you spoke about tayyib and responsible travel, how we can use traveling for the benefit of people. Talk to me about that.
Yes, and that's something we often overlook, as Muslims, we've boxed it as halal is the food we eat and that's it, when we think of tourism. And even when we think of everything else, we're not responsible about it. But, standard luxury travel, most luxury travel, it's usually about opulence. And spoiling yourself. But in Islamic travel, it's quite interesting. It's you're spoiling yourself, but with responsibility. And so halal travel actually goes hand in hand with what mainstream travel industry is now talking about, sustainable tourism. Halal tourism has always been sustainable in the sense of even through the travels of the Prophet, when he'd go from one place to the other and find an animal or if the Sahaba find a tree, or there'd always be that responsibility that you have to leave the world in the way you found it and only make it better. And so that is embedded within Islamic practice and even through travel and journeying through the world. And so what tayyib means is that not only is the food just slaughtered or the meat just slaughtered in the way it's supposed to be slaughtered, but how is it contributing to the environment, your utilization of this meat? Where is the source of the other recipes? Where are they coming from? So you might be having a great halal meat on your plate, but you're eating a lot of unhealthy or foods, or in some cases, in some of these resorts, you'll find that the community next to it is suffering or languishing in poverty, yet you're there living in opulence. So it's a contradiction. What are you doing as a traveler and contributing to that? And when I say living in poverty, I don't mean where in some cases you'll find the communities would prefer to remain traditionally the way they were, and therefore what the hotel does instead is actually contribute to the community. That maintains a balance. But In the negative side is where the community sees no benefit in the tourism. They're not benefiting from and not providing maybe any of the services in the hotel, yet you are encouraging it in opulence and traveling. So the tayyib of responsible tourism is really a combination of what in the mainstream is called, tayyib and halal tourism is really a combination of what the mainstream we call luxury travel and sustainable travel. It goes hand in hand, and one cannot go without the other.
really fascinating, and I hope our listeners will definitely take this opportunity. Of course, halalsafaris.africa, and we're speaking to the founder, that's Sami Omar. Of course, we will be having some more interviews in the future about that particular topic, Tayyib and responsible travel, exploring Islamic history and heritage and reclaiming and retelling those African stories, as well as going a bit more into the fiqh of all of it. But shukran so much to you, Samia. All the best for the future. And we hope to stay in contact, and hopefully we can meet across Africa in different Muslim communities. Shukran so much.
Inshallah. Shukran. Thank you very much for your time. Ma'asalam.
Ma'asalam.